Hello, my name is Benjamin Chickfoshvili. I am 14 years old, and I am interviewing Susan Black, who is my mother. And we are currently recording in Santa Monica, California. So, I'm going to be asking you questions today.
Okay.
And please give me the lengthiest question so I could draw out this interview. Okay. So tell me about one of the most important people in your life. And it can't be me or David.
Well, it kind of is you and David. But there are other people who are really important in my life. I would say my father was very important in my life because he was unlike a lot of fathers of girls in the 1970s. He encouraged us all to be very independent, to be very athletic, and to speak our minds. I think other important people in my life were your dad, because he really encouraged me to think about myself. When I met him, he said, "You're one of the most selfless persons I know." And I thought, God, he's one of the most selfish people I know. But I learned that he wasn't, and we learned from each other to kind of be caring about other people, but also to take care of yourself. And then I think other really important people in my life were when I was a social worker, I met a lot of people who were very ill. They had HIV or AIDS, and they were dying, but their strength and their humor really mattered to me. And there was one in particular, her name was Rosalind Davis. She just was my hero. She was amazing. She had overcome so many hardships and lived life with a lot of joy and not regret. She didn't hold bad things, grudges against bad people. So she taught me a lot about those kind of things. There's so many really important people, but I know I'm not supposed to say my sons, David and Benjamin, but you are. Two of the most important people in my life and have taught me the most about love and patience.
Okay. Are there any, what's your favorite memory, of your childhood? And, the earliest, happiest one?
So it's kind of funny because I don't have a lot of memories of my childhood, but I do have one. And it was when I was in the second grade, and that is the year that in Catholic girls make their first communion, or Catholic boys make their first communion. And after you make your first communion, the boys could become altar boys. So one day, it was in the winter, Marilyn, Zot, and I were playing outside in the snow, and I said, "Let's go ask when we can be altar girls." And Marilyn said, "Okay." So we went to the rectory where the priest lived, and we knocked on the door, and Mrs. Corcoran, the receptionist, said, "Okay, well, I'll go get Father Francis, who is the pastor of the parish." And we sat down in the hallway and on a bench, and we had our wet clothes on from being out in the snow. And Father Francis stood in the hallway, and he said, "There'll be no women's lib in my parish." And I said, "What's women's lib?" I was 10 years old, eight years old, I think, in second grade. And I didn't know what that was, so I didn't understand what he was telling me. And I just sat there, and Mrs. Corcoran, and he left, and Mrs. Corcoran said, "You have to go home now." I said, I don't know why I can't be an altar girl. She said, "I'm going to have to call your father." And I was like, "Why can't I be an altar girl?" And so she called my father. And my father said, "I'll come pick her up when you give her a better answer." One of the reasons why I loved him so much. But I remember that day. And I think it was the start of a long march for me and kind of fighting for women's rights.
Okay. So one of the most adventurous parts of your life is when you went to Africa for how many years?
So I went to Africa for about a little over 5 years. And I lived in Senegal in West Africa. I first went to be a Peace Corps volunteer, and I lived in a small little village on the Senegal River called Tiabou, where they spoke Soninke, And when I got dropped off there from the Peace Corps, all I could say in Soninke was, Anwijam, how did you sleep? I might have been able to say Halilajam, which is how was your afternoon. So I couldn't speak the local language. I barely spoke French, but somehow I loved being there, and I learned both French and Soninke, and wound up staying in Senegal after being in the Peace Corps and moved to a city where I started my own business of translating another language that I learned, Wolof and English to French, and English and Wolof to French, and then teaching people English.
Okay, so like, what was like the most painful memory you have from this?
Oh, I was sick a lot when I was in my village because we had no running water and no electricity, no toilets. So we had latrines, and we didn't have a lot of very healthy food because it was in a desert area. So I ate couscous and leaf sauce every night for dinner, and I hated it. So the food was really bad because it wasn't there wasn't a lot of variety and choices. We didn't have meat, mm-hmm. We didn't have vegetables, we didn't have a lot of that kind of stuff. But also there was a lot of dysentery and kind of intestinal things. So I was sick for a long time while I lived there. So, and then I used to get really sick with these boils on my skin, and they were horrible, and it was painful and ugly, and that was really hard.
Okay, so you've told me stories about you meeting people in Africa and how, like, you would want to meet them again. Any particular people who stick out?
Yes. So there's a couple, and they're all women except for one. Okay, so the first man is Jaja Bachili, and he was the chief of the village that I lived in Tiabu, and he was probably well over 80 by the time I met him. But when I left the village, he cried and he called me his daughter, and he just was always very sweet to me and always invited me to talk to him once I could speak Soninke. There's another mom from that village. See, I call them all mom and dad. Ma Santa, she was amazing. She was super strong and funny and took care of the whole house, and she was just, if I could see her again, that would make me really happy. And my sister there was Fulimata. She was a little kooky. She spoke a little bit of French, so she helped me a lot in kind of settling in the first few months. But I just wonder what would happen to her. And then when I lived in San Luis after the Peace Corps, Yai Soda. Yai means mother in Wolof, and Soda was her name. She was a big woman and would sit on the mat right outside of her door every day and invite me to lunch, and I would have lunch with her and her family every day that I lived there, even though I didn't live with them. And she just was kind and caring, and I just loved her so much. And actually, this blanket here that I'm sitting next to is from Yai Soda.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so prior to your adventures in Africa were your teenage years, and I would like to know what were your most troublesome times during your teenage years?
Teenage years are hard. I think it was just trying to figure out, like, good and bad, right and wrong, feeling to belonging, accepting where you don't belong. It was a time where women's sports had just started, not too long, and 1976 was when women's sports started, so we had a lot to fight for still, about getting uniforms for the girls' sports teams, getting recognition from the girls' sports teams. So I think that was part of the formation of me as an activist for women's rights, in that I just knew that was wrong, and so it was hard because the boys' teams got a lot of things that we didn't get. They got new uniforms every year, and we didn't get new uniforms. They got new shoes. We didn't get new shoes. So I had a lot of time I spent trying to get us those things, and it was hard, and people didn't always think it was a good thing that I was doing, so that was painful.
Okay, so another thing about your teenage years is that it's become a problem, I'm pretty sure, more common with this generation, about drugs. And I would like to know if you've had any bad experiences with drugs.
I haven't, but I'm sure I know people have had. I mean, I'm lucky that I haven't. I mean, we all experimented with different things, but
I never do drugs.
That's what we were talking about, my experience.
I don't do drugs.
Why are you talking about that?
Okay, go on.
Are you going to do the interview?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't have any specific memories of anything that was really bad about that. I just know there was a lot around, and we tried different things. I wouldn't recommend it.
Okay. So, another thing, you are not religious at all anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, was there any, like, particular time in your life when you realized, this is not for me, and was there an aha moment?
Yeah, there was. So I was raised Catholic, and I went to church every day, every Sunday, and I did all the sacraments, communion, well, baptism, I didn't have a choice in, but communion, confirmation, and I went to church every Sunday up until I was a freshman in high school. I mean, I'm sorry, a freshman in college. And Father Bill was the priest at the church on the campus where I went to school at Douglas College of Rutgers University. And I just had this revelation, this aha moment, that I thought the religion discriminated against women. It didn't allow women to be priests. I just thought it was a discrimination against women. And as I realized that, I didn't want to be involved in it. And for a while, I looked toward other religions to see if there was something else that could fit in there for me. And I really couldn't find anything that I didn't think didn't hold women in lower regard than women than men. I think maybe now I would have a different feeling about some things like Buddhism, but I don't know enough about that to say that. But the things that I knew then I felt were really put women in lower positions, and that didn't appeal to me, so I didn't want to be involved in it.
Okay, so you've had a lot of jobs, I'm pretty sure, yes?
Mm-hmm.
So what's like your dream job, and do you still have a dream job, and how have they changed over the years?
So I have had a lot of jobs. I've been a camp counselor when I was younger, I've been a waitress, I've been a social worker, I've been a Peace Corps volunteer, I've been a teacher, I've been a translator, I've been an IT professional, which I am now. The thing I like about it all is there's lots of changes, and I can change, and I know that, and that's what I would say to people is, like, don't worry about where you are now. Change if you want to change. It's taking a risk, but it's important. I think my dream job would be maybe doing some kind of writing and consulting. I really think I have things to share about my experience with grief and helping people who have had loss in their lives, and being positive and finding the upside of things. But I like my job that I have now. I like that I have the ability to do a lot of changes. I have groups around women in technology and leadership in action that we hope to help grow women leaders. So I think I have had my dream jobs. I think there's more dream jobs for me to have. I don't know which they are yet, but I'll find them.
Okay. So you feel very strongly about politics.
Yes.
So let's try not to go too much on a rant right here, but what are your feelings about Mr. Donald Trump?
I'm really sad that he's our president. I'm really sad that people voted for a man who's a misogynist and a racist, and incompetent. I dislike that he's our president, and I hope that he will not be our president soon.
And do you have a statement towards people who do support him?
Wake up.
That's it?
Yeah.
Okay.
You told me not to get too into it, Benjamin, so I went with wake up.
Okay. So what would you say, which job of yours has been most beneficial to you as a person?
That's easy.
Mother.
Well, mother's not a job, so I'm not going to say that one. Mother is the greatest joy of my life, not my job, though. Job-wise was when I was a social worker in New York City for a group called Housing Works, and our mission was to demand housing for homeless people living with HIV, AIDS, chemical dependency, and mental illness. We were an advocacy agency, but we were also a social service agency. I worked with some of the smartest people I have ever met in my life there. I learned so much. I had amazing clients. I learned about poverty, I learned about homelessness, I learned about AIDS and advocacy, I learned about caring for people, seeing past stereotypes. I was absolutely, in terms of jobs, the most fulfilled as a person in that job because I helped people and I made a difference.
And why did you choose to branch away from that?
That's a good question. I got burnt out. It took a lot of me emotionally, and when I moved to California, when I moved to San Francisco in 1998, I just needed a break, and I found other ways to do those kind of things. One was being a mother, but in other ways with my advocacy around like women's rights and helping young women and women at work and mentoring them. I just couldn't do it anymore as a job. It just was too hard.
Okay, so now I want to ask you a question about me.
Okay, you.
Were there any questions, any stages during my life when you thought too much?
No, never. It's hard for people who aren't parents to understand, and since you're 14, you don't know, but, you know, when you have a kid, you just love them and accept them for everything they are and find the joy in everything. You were a handful when you were little. You were really active and kind of difficult to manage sometimes, but you also were funny and energetic and loving and cuddly, so you were always amazing to me. No, I've always been in love with you and always will be.
And what is one of the scariest moments that happened between me and David, either one of us, that you're extremely scared?
Okay, so it was when you were born. So when you were born born with jaundice, and they made me stay in the hospital with you for a couple of days, and then they released you back so I could take you home after 4 days. And then when I took you back to the doctor, they said you had to go back into the hospital. So that was really scary because you were my newborn baby. I wanted you to have home with us, and we just couldn't get you not jaundice. We did get you not jaundice eventually, and you were fine. But then, like 2 months after that, David had a virus that lowered his platelet count to a really low count, and he
what
had to
count?
Go into the hospital.
What count?
His platelet count. Platelets are parts of your blood that make it clot. So he had all these bruises all over his little body, and I knew something was wrong, and I made the doctor see us, and they said he has to go into the hospital. So that was super scary because I was afraid it was something worse than it was. But luckily, both of you were fine. And you really have been pretty healthy and without a lot of accidents and stuff. So I feel like we're doing okay. Don't go and get hurt or anything on me now.
Okay. So you have 6 siblings.
Mm-hmm.
Which one of them was like most integral to you as a person, as like, could either be a mentor or somebody that like made you feel good with the jokes? Or
oh, my siblings? That's easy. Well, I have actually, throughout my life, they all have had different roles. You know, my older sister, Mary Jean, she's the oldest of seven kids, so she helped take care of us. And then as we got older, we became closer and we talk all the time. My sister Patty and I had a year at college together, so she kind of helped me kind of understand college and understand the importance of studying and taking care of myself and not getting caught up in other things that happen at college. My brother Eddie and I took a really long time to get to know each other better, but he is a really loving, caring person, so he's always there for me. And then my sister Catherine, who's a year younger than I, grew up together. We played sports together, we rode bikes together, we had the same friends. She just always was there for me when we were kids. And then my brother Bill and I got close when we were in teen years, because we were both kind of frustrated with things and wanted to grow up and wanted to have our freedom. So we got to support each other in that. But probably the sibling that's remained my closest friend is Regina. She's my youngest sister and the youngest of the family. We have similar experiences in our lives. We're very in touch with our feelings, and we like to talk about our feelings, and we're honest about our feelings. And I talk to her a lot. I'm really happy that she's happy and has a really good life, and she is about me. So I think all of my siblings and I have taken turns mentoring and supporting each other, but Regina's probably been the most, the longest one.
Okay. So I know you like to travel, and we have traveled ourselves with our family. What's a place on the bucket list that has not been crossed off?
Italy. Let's go to Italy. That and Vietnam.
Vietnam? Why Vietnam?
I don't know. It just seems it's supposed to be really beautiful. I'd love to see parts of Asia. I have never been to Asia, so I'd love to learn more about Asian cultures and Vietnam. I'd like to go to China. I'd like to walk on the Great Wall. I've always loved Japanese culture and Japanese history. But Vietnam really calls to me. And Italy, I just want to go to Italy. I want to eat and drink and be merry and go to beaches and hang out with my boys.
Okay. I think that's going to be it for this interview.
Well, thank you, Benjamin. It's been very nice talking with you.
Okay.
I love you.
I love you, too.
How'd I do?
Good.
All right. How long?